What the Tech is brought to you by HelloFresh.com. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Andrew30. Remember, go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Andrew30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thank you to HelloFresh. Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Visit TextExpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Slack is a messaging app which brings together all your team's communication into one place, making work simpler and more productive. Go to Slack.com to learn more. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
We sat in silence for a good minute, and now we're pretending that we heard everything that you guys heard. This is the last week we're doing this. Suncast has internet. The installers are there putting in their line in his line right now.
Right.
So, good. God, my life will be so much easier in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
How you been, Paul? Happy Thanksgiving. I didn't see you last week.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
How was it? Good?
Yeah, we had 16 people here on Thanksgiving Day.
Wow, that's a lot.
That was a first for us.
Who's there?
We usually have a small crowd. I was expecting to have nobody here because we're new or whatever, but I do have family in the area, and I sort of assumed they would have their own traditions that they'd want to uphold, and they invited themselves to my house.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
So that worked out great.
That's
it was
great.
Nice.
We had about the same thing, almost around 20 people, and it was total insanity. You know, you don't get to, if you're hosting, you don't get to enjoy the party.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. It was good. It was good.
Yeah, mine was fine too. Guys, we have a lot to talk about. Last week, Paul wasn't here, and on Sunday, I did a show with John Prosser, where I proceeded to get very drunk.
Nice.
At one point, I did say, suck at the rot.
Yeah,
there was a whole lot of passive aggressiveness coming from my side, but I have to tell you, I don't hate Paul any more than I did yesterday. So
that's not a very high bar, Andrew.
No, no. Right. We have a lot planned for you. Obviously, we didn't do a Black Friday show this year because we weren't able to do a show this year for Black Friday. We will do our holiday picks. We will do our best of 2017, our worst of 2017 coming up. In December, I know a lot of people love those shows. Obviously, we'll plan a drinking show. We have a lot of things planned for you, and I do want to talk about a bunch of stuff here. But, Paul, I know that you had a bunch of articles on Theroux.com that I was going to do. I wanted to pick and go through. I also wanted to get more of a your opinion on the Xbox, because we have not done a show since we did that initial first-off review of the Xbox. I do want to talk about that. And a whole lot more. But before we do, I want to take a moment and talk about our sponsor. And it's HelloFresh. Paul, have you done HelloFresh yet?
I don't think we have.
So these guys are unbelievable. So this is so in right now, right? You know, you could go out and you could have an expensive dinner and you could go through the whole process of it. And that's cool. But some days, you know what? Jess and I like to do date night at home. And we like to open up a bottle of wine, and we love to cook together. I absolutely, to be honest, one of the most relaxing things for me to do is to cook. Now, it's relaxing when you have all the ingredients that you need to cook with. You know, I'll go online, and I'll see something, and I'll say, wow, that looks great to make. And then I realize I don't have half the stuff that I need, and I start adding things and removing things, and it ends up falling apart. But here's the awesome thing about HelloFresh. So, Jess and I did this about a couple of weeks ago. They send over everything you need to make this unbelievable meal. So you go on their website and you could pick depending, you know, how many things that you like. You could pick if you're a vegetarian. They have three meal plans to choose from, which is veggie, a family meal, and of course a classic meal. You could go with a variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. For vegetarian, the veggie meal is vegetarian recipes based on plant-based proteins and grains. And obviously the family meals for the whole family that'll love the recipe. So you get all the ingredients in a box, right? Everything. And you get to and it gives you step-by-step instructions, so you can't mess it up. Even the most novice and the most novice cooks can prepare an unbelievable meal. They give you the instructions. They give you everything you need to make this meal, and it's super fast. Each week, there's even a 20-minute meal on the classic menu, so you know you're not going to spend all night cooking. Generally, they only take around 30 minutes. I actually like taking my time when I cook. It's very relaxing for me, and they have a great offer for our viewers. You know, this is a time, I know everybody's going to holiday parties, and I know everybody has dinner reservations, and it gets overwhelming. And now you're sitting at home, and you're thinking, man, do I want to go out tonight? Absolutely not. Go to HelloFresh.com, use the offer code Andrew30. That's Andrew30. You get $30 off your first week of deliveries when you do this. Paul, this is something that you would love. You really would, because I know you're a big foodie like me. And you like your wine, and you like to take your time and make food an event. I don't believe in just eating and running out. I like to be an event. You know, conversations happen over the dinner table. Conversations happen with friends at dinner. I think this is a great, great thing, and it's a phenomenal service. Now, I prefer these guys over some of the other people, the other companies out there, because they don't stick to one theme, and it just feels light, and it feels fresh, and it's not overwhelming to make these meals. It's amazing. Go to HelloFresh.com, and you can use their offer code Andrew30 at checkout to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. I want to thank them for supporting the show. Paul, where do you want to begin?
Where do I want to begin?
Yeah, where do you want to start this week?
Well, I mean, since it's so far behind, maybe just briefly touch on the Xbox One X.
Okay, let's go. Let's do it.
You know, it's so rare to have something like this come up, because there's always a problem with everything, right? Any product you review, you can always point to one thing and say, okay, well, if it weren't for this one thing, you know. But and maybe for the Xbox One X, just initially, it's the price. I know $500 is a bit much for some people. But what this thing does for that price, what this thing does for people who have existing Xbox game collections, you know, is astonishing. And it runs the gamut from the many, many games that have been specifically enhanced for the console, which look awesome, obviously.
And that's the part that I'm actually very surprised as to how good the enhanced games look. You know, I don't think a lot of people expected there to be the improvement that there is, right? I think some things I assume would be improved, but it's been overwhelmingly extremely positive.
It's really interesting to me that, you know, this industry, this kind of sub-industry, video games, is very negative, and there's a lot of nitpicking and tradition, and, you know, it's bad. I mean, and look, all tech markets are kind of like this, but video games are particularly bad, and yet, you know, what we see overwhelmingly is like really positive reviews for this thing. And my own experience is that, and it's funny because I started out in a 1080p display. I moved over to the 4K one for a long time. I actually very recently switched back to 1080p. Trying to get a handle on how it does what it does. But the gist of it is, if you have an Xbox game, right, that's compatible with the Xbox One, it doesn't matter if it's an original Xbox game that's backward compatible, or an Xbox 360 game, or an Xbox One game, it will always be better on the Xbox One X, always, in some way. And it's just a matter of degree.
Sure.
It kind of works in both directions, too. So, for example, if you have a game that was made for 4K and for HDR, and you play it on a 1080p display, it's going to look better there, too. You know, it actually does super sampling to make it look better on lower res screens. It doesn't do this yet, but it will soon support 1440p displays. I actually have a killer 1440p display that I want to use this thing on, but I'm just waiting for that explicit support, because right now it would just be 1080p.
Yeah.
It's impressive, you know, and I think spending my own money, I mean, I think for myself, well, you know, I would have just spent the money, but realistically, it would probably be smart for a lot of people to wait till next year, because the price will come down. And it's absolutely the case that you should spend your time and money this year, if you haven't already, on getting the right 4K/HDR display.
So do you think this is the year to go ahead and do it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We're not, because last year we had this conversation, and I think we both had agreed that, you know what, It's a great buy and you'll enjoy it, but there were still issues with the 4K market as far as standardization and HDR that a lot of manufacturers weren't supporting yet.
No, it's all there, dude.
Now it's all there.
All you have to, any normal person can walk into a Costco or obviously a Best Buy or whatever and see where the prices are. The only thing that's kind of surprising to me about 4K displays, and maybe this is just a goofy thing that I want, but they're just like stupid big. Like you can get a 55, 60, 80, whatever inch display relatively inexpensively. What's kind of hard to find is a 27, 30 inch, you know, kind of computer display.
Yeah. I think for 42, a reasonable price. 42 is probably the smallest that people are.
Yeah. I went into Costco thinking that would be like not a bad way to buy something like that locally. And I don't remember off the top of my head, but I want to say the smallest one they had was possibly 40 or 42. And I was like, dude, I want to use this next to my computer. I just want to, and he looked at me like, I was idiotic. He's like, why wouldn't you just want a bigger one? Like, I just want it to fit on my desk, you know, but they don't really make those.
So
not cheaply.
So obviously people are over, what are the negatives? I mean, we've really concentrated on the positives with this Xbox, but
seriously, there aren't,
price is a little pricey for a lot of people.
It's pricey.
I get that.
The controller is the standard plastic Xbox controller, which I find to be a little cheap, you know, for the past year plus 2 years, whatever it's been, I've been using that Xbox Elite controller, which is wonderful. I know that since writing the review, I was reminded that Microsoft actually makes these kind of interim controllers. They have special edition controllers of different kinds that have nice grips and things. And they should have put something like that in the box. I think in their zeal to say, look, this thing's just an Xbox One, you know, they've kind of forgotten the fact that this is the premium version of the Xbox One. You know, it would be like if you owned a Lexus and you got into a Toyota and all the window switches and the buttons control knobs are all exactly the same. You'd feel a little ripped off, even though you know in your heart that, you know, internally these cars are based on the same platform and, you know, whatever. You spent all this additional money. It should be nicer, you know, what you have. This is a nitpick. I mean, a controller is a $50, $60 thing. I mean, it's a small disappointment. The other thing that happened this year is that Microsoft canceled the Kinect, which even when it was around was kind of a bulky and expensive way of doing what Xbox should just do natively, which is voice control. And so you can add that to an Xbox controller using a headset, but they need a way from you just to be in the room like I am now and say, Xbox, do something, and it should just do it. And I feel like maybe that was something they could have added to the console. Again, you know, semi-justify the additional cost of the device, but you know, beyond those things, and we really are kind of nitpicking here, there really aren't many negatives. Like I said, you know, every game's better. The thing is basically silent, you know. When I was running the side-by-side tests with the Xbox One S, which is, you know, the previous gen version, that's the only thing I could hear was the old one. Like, and it's not like the Xbox One S is loud. It's just that there is a fan thing that kicks in from time to time. It's there.
Yeah.
I am super sensitive to this kind of sound. And in fact, you know, just for whatever it's worth, not that it really matters, but as I've been talking, what's happened is there's a truck that has pulled up outside. And my wife went out and got the door. I guess it was some kind of a package. And I'm just like sensitive to that. Like I sit here and I hear this kind of low bass rumbling over in the corner, I got distracted by it, you know, and that's the way I am. And the Xbox One X, I can assure you, if this thing made any sound at all, I would have jumped all over it for that. And when you think about all of the stuff that it does, the additional horsepower that is pouring through this thing, the fact that it doesn't have an external power brick and it's in this smaller form factor than its predecessor, The notion that this thing could not make sound or would not make a lot of sound is crazy. It's impossible.
It's amazing considering it is a computer, right? It's a computer crammed into that little case.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
That's awesome.
I should just real quick. I'll just say I don't care about this personally, but some people will complain or have complained perhaps that it doesn't have a VR solution, right? So we know that Microsoft just launched Windows Mixed Reality this year on PCs. My expectation is that comes to Xbox One next year. Obviously, this thing has the power to drive that kind of display or whatever. Yeah. So we'll see.
So I'm very excited for these little pieces because I am going to get an Xbox. So every time you tell me something positive, but I also need to get a 4K TV. I'm not going to buy the new Xbox without a 4K TV. And you know, it's amazing because the second you fall out of the loop a little bit, you know, things change really rapidly. And I haven't been in the market TV for quite some time. And there's so many new things to put into consideration. Like Vizio has kind of fallen out of grace for a lot of people.
Yeah.
People aren't really talking about Vizio as much as they did because the pricing, you know, they're not as competitive with the price.
Yeah. And that
anymore.
Was, by the way, something I also saw when I went to Costco. And so they have different brands now, whatever. But
listen, the reality is, do you have to go and buy a $1,400 Sony anymore? Because the technology changes so rapidly.
Yeah, might be there's something to be said for spending $500 to $800.
Yeah.
Getting something that, by the way, is going to be fantastic. And then, you know, maybe it lasts a couple of years. And you replace it because either it died
but
or...
But regardless,
you know,
it's only going to last a couple of years. Because if you think about it, I bought this 1080p, this beautiful TV, about 3 years ago. And...
Right.
You know, technology changes and it's time to replace it if we want better quality picture. But that's never been the mentality for the TV industry. You know, TVs were something that you bought. I mean, now it's a mentality, but TVs were something that you bought and you let it sit there for about 10 years and you replaced it when it broke.
Yeah. And they used to last a really long time, but that's not the case anymore.
Yeah. Everything, everything changes and everything evolves. You know, there are computers at this point. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess if you can get over that, and I kind of did, yeah, you can save a lot of money that way. The other thing, what I would say to you though is, you know, and I would say this to other people too who don't have a 4K display yet, and you're thinking about it, you know, get the display for sure. If you do want to go the Xbox route, you can save a ton of money by getting an Xbox One S, which, by the way, will still play all the same games. They won't look quite as good, obviously. They'll look great. I mean, it's still a very formidable console, but it does 4K and HDR for entertainment, right? So if you do streaming video or Blu-rays, you get those capabilities there. So it's still 4K, just not in games. And honestly, for a lot of people, that's probably good enough. And when you look at the prices, I think over Black Friday or that weekend, it went to an all-time low of somewhere around $185 or $190 or $189. But you should, I mean, you almost never have to spend more than $225 on one of these things.
Yeah. I want to continue this discussion, obviously, in the coming weeks, but I do want to talk about something very interesting, and that's Microsoft hitting 600 million Windows 10 users on the way to a billion. It's going to be a bumpy road. We're going to talk about this and a whole lot more, obviously, but before we do, I want to talk about a new sponsor to the show, and that's Text Expander. Now, I was talking to Paul about this, and Paul's familiar with this. It's made by Smile Software, by the way. They make a whole bunch of stuff out there. This is awesome. So I have it on my Mac. It's cross-platform. So you could have it on Windows and iOS, on the Mac. You know, it's on all the platforms. And it has a bunch of different little things that it does. But the thing for me, and that's every week I'm going to kind of highlight another feature of this. But the thing I want to talk about is how I could create little keywords that mean something else. So, I have the software installed, and pretty much what this does is makes your life a lot easier, and it increases your productivity by abbreviating certain things and triggering certain words to do certain tasks. So every day when I'm doing a podcast, I write, you know, hey, the show's going live at 1 o'clock, go and follow us or whatever. I have this message for Twitter and I copy and paste the same message. I have it clipped and I copy and paste and I drop it in there. Now what I did, I loaded it up where it does MM tweet, and that's all I write, and boom, the message is right there. So you could search for snippets also. You could create snippets. You could search for snippets. You could create these shortcuts, which I think is really cool. And I think, Paul, for you especially, something like this is really interesting because I'm sure you copy and paste stuff all the time, and you constantly have to make the same posts on Twitter or on your website or in an email. With this, it's super easy. You just have that one little quick trigger word and boom, the whole thing is loaded up. This is pretty awesome. So here's a great example. Okay. Let's say you were at a conference and now you come home from the conference and you've collected all these new contacts that you want to follow up on. You could create a text expander snippet with the following message, whatever you're doing. Use the fill in field in the actual application. Use a filling field with a contact name and a custom topic, whatever you're putting in there. And you could blow through all these tasks in minutes instead of hours because you're just using the words that you already have pre-programmed in there, which it's really awesome for anybody, whether it's, you know, personal emails or work emails. I have this on my Mac, and I'm using it for tweets right now, which is pretty crazy, right? So I'm just doing MMT, and then it'll load it up. So it's perfect. If you go to textexpander.com/podcast, you get 20% off for your first year. Great offer by these guys. Go there. Go to textexpander.com/podcast. Go learn about this because there's a number of features. So every week I'm going to show a different feature. Next week I'm going to have a little demo that I'm doing, and I'm going to show you guys how I use it. I think it's really cool, especially for someone that wants to be a little productive and wants to, you know, skim a couple minutes off their day, which I highly recommend. Textexpander.com/podcast. Paul, this is something you could use. I think you could really use this. I got to send you this. 600 million Windows 10 users.
Yep.
Where's the billion?
Well, remember, they were saying they were going to hit that number by next July.
Yeah.
So technically speaking, they could still make it. But I think the way to look at this is that given the state of the PC market, especially given the fact that their phone business collapsed, right? This is actually fairly impressive.
Yeah. You know? Well, there's another stat that impresses me even more. And that's the fact that 20% of Windows 10 users have upgraded to the latest version.
Yeah. No, it's things are starting to churn along here.
So I was talking to someone about this and they said, well, how could you be impressed by something like that? It's only 20%. And this is kind of forced on you also. So 20% shouldn't be impressive. I said, well, I'll tell you why it's impressive. Look at Android. Right. Okay, Android has 332 million users. Is that number not accurate? 332?
No, they have like 2 billion users.
332 devices shipped worldwide. Okay, this year.
Okay.
2016. I'm sorry, 2016.
Actually, it should be something like 1.5 billion.
It could be more. This is as of 2016. Okay, so forget it. Okay. Forget about my stat. It's a totally flawed stat that I just pulled up, and I'm an idiot. But it still doesn't break my point here. Because my point is, if you look at Android and you look at the current, you know, how it's spread apart, the latest version of Android, which is version 8, has less than 1% market share. Fine.
Oh, yeah.
Not fair. Yeah. Not fair to compare it to something that's been out for a year. Okay. Look at Android 7.0, 7.1. What is it? Nougat, right?
Yep.
17%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Android is an interesting thing because those updates are controlled by wireless carriers in many cases. You don't see that on the PC side. But, you know, for Microsoft to deploy Windows 10, like a new version of Windows 10 to people's computers, they need to know that it's going to work. You know, and they have a complex matrices of, you know, conditions on why that may or may not be the case. And so the thing that's interesting to me about this is the speed at which it's going out suggests that they've kind of gotten a handle on understanding that because they've had problems with this in the past. You know, so a year and a half ago when they released the anniversary update, there were a lot of compatibility issues. We didn't see that this past spring with the creators update, and we're not seeing it yet. I don't think we will with the fall creators update. So doesn't mean there won't be problems in the future, but it's interesting, and they've done a good job with that. You know, 50% of all of the PCs in the world are still running Windows 7, and you could kind of make that argument like, well, geez, that thing's like 8 years old. You know, what's going on? There's still 2 years left. Most of the people running Windows 7 are businesses, obviously, or most of their computers running Windows 7 are businesses, and that this is the countdown. You know, we're trying to avoid that XP apocalypse thing that happened a couple of years ago. So I don't know. There's a lot of ways you could look at this negatively, I guess, you know, especially if you think about the 1 billion promise, which was such a curious thing for them to do. But
when do you think they'll realistically?
Yeah.
When is this a possibility to hit a billion if they ever do?
Yeah. I think they will. I mean, the install base is well over a billion. It's just a matter of time. You know, the issue is going to be, when people give up on their computer, whether they buy a new computer or go with a Chromebook or a Mac or something else.
Yeah.
The issue is also going to be, you know, it's interesting because if you think about 2 years from now, when Windows 7 goes out of support, you'll still have some individuals say, you know, I don't care. I'm still going to use this thing and I only use it occasionally anyway. Who cares? You know, whatever. And that might push them. You know, the fact that Microsoft will be pushing Windows 10 on them might push them to choose a rival platform
there's
at that
so many,
point.
There's
too.
So many variables, right? It's not about, you know, we always like to talk about Mac versus PC, but it's really not. You're competing with everything. Everything.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, the world's going to change a lot in the next 2 years, too. There's going to be a lot more solutions where you have a phone and you can dock it somehow and get a keyboard mouse screen. Yeah. That stuff's going to be big. A lot of different like hybrid mobile devices. Remember ARM's coming to Windows 10 as well. So
the courier.
The courier is coming back.
The courier is coming back. Apple might have their own foldable.
No idea. It's too terrible not to copy. So, you know, we'll see. But I seriously, they are going to hit a billion. There's no doubt about it.
It's just a matter
of
when.
at the current pace, we're looking at 2 years, right? Because they added 100 million in 6 months. If they maintain this pace, that's 2 years. That would do it, right? But it's not going to take that long because the other thing that's happening in the next 2 years, again, is that Windows 7 is going to expire. And that may not be incentive enough for a lot of individuals, but it will be incentive for a lot of businesses.
Okay, so what's the current number for Windows 7? Active daily, do we have a real number?
Not exactly, but it's 50% of the PCs in use are running Windows 7, roughly speaking.
50%. And once that expires, so what percentage of that would you say is enterprise that will have to update once support is over? You know, it's hard to tell.
Well, I mean, by the way, even some enterprises might end up going Chromebook too. But let's say, you know, what percentage of those is enterprise? It's impossible to say for sure, but I would guess it's about 80%.
Okay, 80%. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tremendous market share.
Yeah, I mean, if the size of the PC market is 1.5 billion, when it could be plus or minus hundreds of millions of that. That's 750 million computers right there.
Yeah. It's an interesting market. I mean, it really is. I have to tell you, as on a side note, my wife has been using that HP, the Elite Book. I'm still waiting for the one that Paul got, and I did it. But so she's been using it, and it's really the first PC she's been really using every day because her MacBook Air decided it's time to go to bed.
Sure.
And it never woke up. So I gave her that, and she's been using that for about a week. And she hates Windows Hello because it doesn't work on her face because it was set up for me. I'm reading you a message.
Oh,
right
I see.
Now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah okay. I'm reading because I messaged her. I said, listen, tell me what you like and tell me what you don't like because I'm on the air now and I want to make this into a bit. So she hates Windows Hello because it doesn't recognize her face. And then it freaks out when she says, don't look at my face. I'll put in the code.
You can obviously fix that.
Yeah. She's not super crazy over that. Someone walked into the house. Let's see who this is. Hello? Let's find out.
Survey says.
Oh. There we go. Thank you for that. Sorry. I got a little alarm because I got... Nobody's supposed to come here. And it was my intern. He brought me my mail. And he gave me the finger, actually.
I need this service.
Yeah. So I messaged her. I said, tell me what you don't like. She goes, I don't really like Windows Hello. And the first time I saw it engage, I was caught off guard. And you see the red lights going?
Yeah.
It was freaky. She says that it's much easier to use than what she thought of Windows before. And I said, what do you mean?
Well, yeah, I mean... If she hasn't been on Windows in several years, which is probably the case.
Yeah, she says I feel more comfortable going to this than I had going to a Windows 7 computer. So she's talking about Windows 10 compared to Windows 7.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that would be an easier transition if you're a Mac user to Windows 10, right? That's interesting. I'm curious, what do you think of that? Do you think it's an easier transition now to go from, I guess, High Sierra? Let's say you have a brand new MacBook. You go from High Sierra to a premium Windows-based laptop.
I don't know. I go in the other direction, right? And so I find the transition between Mac and PC to be fairly simple. There are little things about the Mac that I find limiting. You know, in Windows, it's wonderful in any application. Like in Skype, I can hit the Alt key and F and the file menu opens or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no way to do that on the Mac with a keyboard. And I find that to be...
Is there really no way? I'm sure someone
will tell me. No easy way that I'm aware of. There's no default way to do it. And that's tough because maybe because I'm a writer, my hands are on the keyboard. I like to work with my hands, when it comes to getting stuff done. And I'm very efficient at this. I know all of the keyboard shortcuts for Photoshop, Elements that I use every day, and the various apps I use. So that kind of thing is confusing to me. But, the basic usage of the two systems is very similar. You just have to understand the nuances. Like Mac OS has a really nice, I think it's called Spotlight Search function, where it's like Command, Space, comes up in the middle of the screen. It's wonderful. Windows has that too. It's just down in the corner. So, but it's only one button. You press the start button, you start typing.
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you the same kind of thing. And if you can navigate around those little, platform specific differences, like Mac, on the Mac, if you hit the maximize button now, it works differently than it used to because the Mac supports full screen apps now and whatever. I find that stuff to be simpler and more intuitive, if you will, on Windows.
Can you give me a realistic, give me a realistic good case for full-size apps?
Oh, so by the way, I've spent a big chunk of this year using full-screen apps, almost exclusively, not on my desktop. I full-screen apps, to me, fall apart on a big screen. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But on a laptop, and really, even on a 15-inch laptop, I routinely use full screen apps now, and I was just experimenting. It's funny you mentioned this because just literally last night I was experimenting with this on the Mac
because
Mac
has, I know you were.
Yeah.
I see
yeah.
everything.
Mac has, like real full screen apps, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
Windows
yeah.
does too. Kind of, you can go into like a tablet mode and then all the apps are full screen.
No, real. This is like real. It takes
but it's real. Like you can do it on an app by app basis. And it's kind of interesting because each of the apps is almost like its own virtual workspace. And the way you shift, if you were to switch, I'm
doing it right now. I'm swiping.
I'm not explaining it to you, but in case no one is familiar with this. On the Mac, if you have an app that's full screen and then you do like it's Command Tab, but like Alt Tab to get to another app. If that other app is not full screen, or even if it is, probably, I don't have one in front of me to see what the animation is. Like you literally, the whole screen shifts. Like
that's what
go to the desktop and then there's these running apps. And then if you Command Tab back, it shifts and it just goes back to the app. And
or you could do like a 3-finger, swipe, and it'll just bring you back to that app. Reasons, I get it, right? Productivity wise, but I'm trying to think.
Well, that's interesting, right? I mean, what you just said is interesting because that is what I was talking about. Like, my familiarity with Windows is such that I'm very comfortable using it keyboard based for. I mean, obviously, use the mouse for stuff, but I can do a lot of stuff just with the keyboard.
Sure.
Those kinds of gestures and swipes, those gestures are something you have to learn. But once you do learn them, you become very productive using them.
Yeah. So this is interesting, right?
Because
on the PC, like I don't necessarily use full screen apps. I rarely do that on Windows, on PC. And I like to be in, especially for what I do, I have to have like multiple things happening and I'm constantly going back and forth.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I'm serious. Like, in testing this,
you're finding it easier to swipe back and forth rather than tabbing.
Look, you could have multiple windows open, and you're going to switch between them some way. And that way, on Windows, would typically be Alt Tab, maybe, or if you're a mouse user, you can use a mouse and select the window. It comes to the front, whatever. Okay. Well, I mean, having them floating doesn't provide any particular advantage if you think about it.
No, it really doesn't. I think it just.
If anything,
I honestly think it's a psychological thing. Yeah, I think it's a mental thing. I think this is what we're used to, so we think we're going to be more productive if we're clicking side. Did we have Windows?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true. And the thing I'll say is, the issue for me here on this screen, this is probably a 27-inch screen, is that it's just too big. I'm not going to run a web browser full screen. It looks stupid.
So it's
whatever.
Amazing because the argument has always been on the tablet is a multi-screened experience, right? You have split screens and you could have maybe tabbed applications and that's what the tablet is eventually going to. I'm going to take a bet and I'm going to say this is a safe bet that in 5 years, iOS will probably allow you to have floating applications on
you this. Know, it's funny you say that because I always thought that, but now I'm starting to think maybe this is not necessary because the truth is.
Well, now maybe this is where the disconnect happens. Yeah, in other words, this is the changeover.
There is a need to do inter-app communication of some kind. You want to drag and drop something from one app to the other or however you want to do that. iOS pretty much does do that today, by the way. Android does too. You can do these split screen modes. You can do multiple apps on the screen at once. You can drag and drop between them on iOS at least. It's a little bulky, but it works. And I think, you know, if you kind of go through all the different things you might need to do on a computer or whatever, that's pretty much most of it. And that was the point of Windows 8 when they did it, right? They did it badly, but the idea was some side-by-side Windows is going to be enough for most people on a tablet screen, right? That's all we're going to need.
By the way, a Suncast update, he's not getting internet today.
Oh, God.
The installs are there.
Why? What happened?
I don't know. We're getting the update right now. I was a day away
from... Did they get my phone call?
Yeah. I don't care how much that guy pays. I was a day away from starting a Kickstarter for him to fund them to move to a civilization that has, you know, modern technology. He's been... Honestly, there's no tools where he lives. He's been making, you know, an axe out of rocks and sticks.
Someone down the street just invented fire.
Yeah, someone just invented fire where he is. He's typing right now, so I'm guessing that there was a problem with the installation, and they'll probably come tomorrow or the next day. Anyway, so, it's interesting because we yell and we scream for change, right? And we want improvements, and we want things that are familiar to us, very much like on the desktop, right? Paul, people think I'm nuts. The way that I use, I'm the director of marketing at my company.
Yeah.
I oversee all the marketing, and I have a very hands-on role with the digital marketing for the business. It's multiple properties, and I'm a little bit of a control freak, and I should probably hire someone to do this job because it's, you know, tweeting and stuff like that. But I have a system that works, and I feel that it gets good results. And the way that I do it is I do everything on the desktop. I do my Instagramming on the desktop because I use two different apps. I use one called, on the Mac, I use something called Flume. Flume, I think. And another application called Grids, Grids.
Yeah.
I use Grids on Windows also because they have a great Windows application. I use Tweetbot for my Twitter. I use Facebook, obviously, just for Facebook. I use the browser. I also have a Snapchat app, which is very difficult to find, but I have a Snapchat app that I use for Snapchat for the company. So I'm doing everything on the desktop, and I find this to be very productive. I have multiple experiences here. A couple years ago, people wanted to do all of this on a tablet. And the argument was, well, we need a couple things. We need floating windows. We need a desktop. Sure. We need at least a split screen mode, and we need a file management service.
Right.
On iOS, you could essentially do everything that I said, right? You could have floated. You could have a split screen view.
There's not much in the way of floating windows, but yes, you can.
But you know what? It's not 100% there. But you know what though? You could float a video if you're watching a video. You could float a video.
Yeah, video can be in a floating window. That's true. Yeah.
You could do the split screen mode with certain applications that they support it, and you have a file management service now. You have a file management system. You could actually go into folders.
Yeah. By the way,
nobody's using it.
Well, no, of course not.
Again, people are going to say, no, I use it. No, I mean the majority of people that, arguing.
The Files app is not necessary for 99% of the people using an iPad or an iPhone or whatever. But, you know, the one thing that app kind of gets right, and this is something I desperately need in Windows, and it makes me crazy because it was kind of a feature of the file picker from Windows 8, and we don't really have a store app version of File Explorer now, but I need a way to... we kind of do it with OneDrive, actually. I need a way to like essentially virtualize cloud storage of all kinds in File Explorer. You know,
the placeholders you want.
Yeah, but I want it to be for everything. You know,
okay, explain.
Like one thing that's when you go to a system like Chrome OS that's based mostly on the notion that your files are going to be in the cloud, they make it very seamless for you to access your files in the cloud. You know?
Yeah.
And when you have a legacy system like Windows, they make it very easy to access your files in OneDrive because that's what Microsoft makes. And then you have to rely on third parties to make that app for their own services like Google Drive does or Dropbox and whatever. And what I'd rather see is this just be like a, like, and you see this in mobile apps, like, I just want to plug into these systems and choose which ones I want to use. And I want to have them be there all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to be able to, I want to be able to drag a file out of Google Photos into Adobe Express, you know, into WordPress and have it go upload to my website. I don't want to have to bring it to my computer first. I mean, it will really do that, maybe. No, it wouldn't. You know, I just want to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
and that's one of those things. Like, I think for a lot of people who are kind of stuck in the old way of doing things on a computer, they're like, what are you talking about? Why would you ever need to do that? And it's like, well, it would be way more efficient than what I'm doing right now.
I have to tell you, though, I've been using my iPad Pro all the time now.
Yeah.
I use it all the time at work. It actually, but the way that I treat it, it's almost like a secondary window. If I had a second monitor, sure, I could probably get it, you know, not need it. Right. So I wanted to ask you about the placeholders, because we're still talking about this, right?
Okay.
OneDrive got this right initially.
Yeah.
It worked. Yep. It worked.
Well, by the way, they're not the only ones that do this.
Well, right now Dropbox is doing it as well, right?
Yeah. And I think Google might be doing it now too.
Okay. I don't think Dropbox is doing it yet.
Well, they're in the process of doing it. Isn't one of those things where I think they might be. Maybe it's like business customers first or something.
I don't know. Well, I got to look into it because I thought it was on, and I went into my Dropbox, and I could not find anything for it. So maybe I haven't, you know, I got to opt in for it or it's a package. But on the Mac, they do placeholders. I don't know if you know this.
I did not. Who does?
Apple with the iCloud Drive.
I actually did not know that, but that doesn't.
But they do it a very strange way. Okay. So in iCloud, let's say you have everything in iCloud and you know, you wipe everything out and now you start it over. I use Hootsuite as well. Someone in the chat I'm saying, I use Hootsuite for automating stuff all the time. It's phenomenal. Okay. So let's say I have a folder, it's called Paul's Pictures. Right, and I saved it for you because you needed me to take something off, and I put it in my iCloud and I wiped it away. I never need to access this, ever.
Right.
But if I open it, and let's say I open it for some reason, I want to see what's in Paul's pictures. For me, it'll start downloading the images.
Right.
And it doesn't show a preview. It just shows like what the file is, like the file type preview. So if it's a JPEG, it'll show me like their icon for images. I have to click on the download thing depending on it. Sometimes I got to click on the download thing to download them. And sometimes it automatically downloads once I open the folder. I can't understand the consistency here. It's really weird, but they do placeholders as well.
Yeah. So I just looked it up. I don't know if it or when it was rolled out, but Dropbox does do it. And Google Drive does too.
Okay. Let me see. Dropbox. What is it called? Placeholders?
Well, back when they were first
Project
announced.
Project Infinity.
That was the code name.
Yeah. What do they call it now?
I don't know. That's what I found was Project Infinity. So I'm not sure.
I think they're calling it Smart Sync. I think
that sounds right. These services all do selective sync. In Dropbox, you have to really look to find it, but that means you go in and you say, I only want to sync this stuff.
Well, that's the issue that I have right now. So we use Dropbox at my company. And I got everybody on Dropbox Business, and you know, we don't have we had individual Dropbox accounts for everybody that accessed Dropbox, and that's pretty much the entire company. So we had 50 separate Dropbox accounts.
Sure.
And we were paying, you know, whatever, $12 a month for 50 different accounts. So what I did, I moved everything to Dropbox for Business, and everything is, you know, we have Teams now, like normal people. But even with the selective syncing, where I could choose the folders, sometimes there are folders that I need synced sometimes.
Yeah.
So I got to actually, you know, that's the pain in the butt.
This stuff is complex by nature.
It really is. No, it's not as simple as...
on OneDrive, it's confusing too, because in the latest version of Windows 10, they brought back placeholders, essentially. They call it files on demand. But the way it works is actually really confusing. You know, if you went in and said, I want this, where do I turn it on? You would find something that you would think you were turning it on, but you're not. And it's just confusing. It's confusing.
Yeah, it's a hard thing.
It's a hard thing to explain to people, and it's a tough thing when you have a customer who's out in the road on their laptop, and they're going to work on the plane, and guess what? It didn't sink
because they didn't do it right.
You know, it's just a tough thing.
Anything for productivity, right? That's the goal. Try to be more productive every day, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I do have a great productive tool for you guys if you if you're like me and you are trying to get everybody in the modern age at your company and you're trying to get everybody on the same page. I highly recommend checking out slack.com, where work happens. You can find out why at slack.com. So I was talking about teams and different assignments for different roles, and I set Dropbox up to do this, where we have different teams for different people and different files. I've moved essentially everything to the cloud. Obviously, redundant backups locally, that's what you do, but I have multiple backups, but essentially everybody accesses the cloud for the content. And one of the problems that I've always faced is keeping everybody on the same page, even with GFQ, even with what I'm doing, you know, and it's... You know, this is a good life lesson, right? I preach these things where I work, but even in my own environment where I know this is the way to do it, I'm still really half-assing. Like Paul, the communication with Paul could be a little bit easier, right? With Paul and Brad and me and our editor, Suncast, and our intern, whenever, what time we need to do shows. So what I'm going to do for GFQ is set up a Slack account where we all have individual teams and one governing group where everybody could be involved in. So if we need to trade images or messages or documents, very easily we could do so with Slack. They have over 1,000 apps that integrate instead of some of the other companies that compete that do way less. Some of the apps that integrate are Salesforce, Zendesk, Google Drive. It's phenomenal. You keep everybody on the same page all the time. You don't have to search for missing emails and missing information. Everything is right there in this amazing messaging service. Go to slack.com right now. You could check it out. Also, let them know you heard about it on What the Tech, because I really like this service and it's a service that I use. All the companies that I spoke about today, I use every single one of their products. And that's amazing when you actually use the products and you talk about it, because it's a real sell here, boys and girls. I really highly recommend this. If you are looking to increase the productivity and you're looking to increase the communication at your company or at your small business, this is the way to go. Slack.com, where work happens. That was nice. That was a nice one. I like these guys. If I could figure out how to get here. So, Paul.
Yes, sir.
So we touched on net neutrality when it was happening.
Yeah, and now we're going to talk about it when it's not happening.
Yeah, well, now it's not happening. But I do want to say this. It's so hard to have this discussion because people get very upset because people have made this into a political thing. I don't like to make this into a political thing.
Yeah, no, I think of this as more of a fairness thing.
It's more of a for the consumer. Now, I don't care if you stand left or right and in the middle, you're a libertarian, Democrat, whatever. We have to really look at what we need out of a service that we use, right? The internet is what it is, and it's not perfect by any means, but it works for the most part. By changing things or saying, hey, listen, for the lack of, you guys are just scared and this legislation is here because people are afraid of what's going to happen, not actually what is happening, I think that's a little bit of an irresponsible way to look at it. So I had this discussion with somebody that is on the other side, okay? We know the argument as to why we need net neutrality, but I was talking to someone, a very intelligent guy, and this was his stance. And I really think it comes from a lack of understanding of what can happen.
What has happened? I would bring it to what have these companies done when they were unfettered by regulation?
So one of the companies,
what have they done?
So here, there are so many stories. Here's a great example of this. So I was having this discussion with somebody, and he said, and I was bringing up the ISPs, for example. And I said, well, here's a fear, okay? There's so many different scenarios here, but this is a very simple conversation to have, and we could all agree on this. Competition is great, right? He goes, yeah, absolutely. We need more. I said, perfect. He goes, and that's why I'm for, you know, let the companies compete with each other in a regulate itself. I said, you know what? In a perfect world, absolutely. But let's look at the scenario. I said, how many ISPs do you have in your area? He said, 3. I said, really, what do you have? He goes, well, I got Comcast, I got Time Warner, I could do AT&T UVerse, and we have Fios. I said, so you have 4 different providers in your area. And where do you live? And he told me where he lived. And it's a suburb of a smaller city, not New York City. Okay. Mm-hmm. Northeast. He's in the Northeast. I said, I live in New York City. Okay. New York City. Do you know how many options I have? I have one cable provider and I have Verizon Fios. Those are the only two options that I have.
Right.
Now, up until 8 years ago, there was one game in town. How is there competition if there's one game in town? So if you are unlucky, and by the way, still in New York, there are areas that don't have Fios. Like if you go to certain areas in Brooklyn or the Bronx, they have one ISP provider. So you have one ISP provider that now comes to you and says, yeah, Paul, listen, you've been going on that YouTube thing too much, and it's kind of cutting into cable.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to tax you on this as a internet television access rights fee for $12.99 a month. And he goes, he goes, yeah, but that won't happen. I said, but it does happen.
No, that has happened.
It does happen. It does happen.
Already happened.
By the way, I'll give you another example. Give you another example. The thing that we feared happening, remember that poster of, you know, you get T-Mobile and you get free Netflix to stream on, or you get AT&T and you get AT&T's properties for free, but you got to pay a little extra or you get throttled on the other stuff. That's happening now.
Sure.
And people are applauding it. The same people that were fighting for net neutrality are the people saying, well, this is great. I could go on T-Mobile and look, it's not cutting into my data caps. I go, no, that's a fake reward.
It's broader than this too, though. It's also anti-innovation because what this does is give unfair advantage to the companies that already happen to be really big and they can just control their monopolies. So for example, if some rival to Netflix showed up, and they offered better pricing, you know, better movie selection, whatever it was. Well, guess what? They can't compete because Netflix can pay the carriers
to
do the pay and play thing.
Yeah.
If you use Netflix, you're going to get better performance artificially over those networks because they can pay for it. Whereas, you know, Bob's new video service, hot new startup out of, you know, wherever, can't. And that is, you know, it's always been a big issue with monopoly, and it's the reason why, you know, Microsoft got in the trouble for bundling. You're taking an unfair advantage of a monopoly that you have to artificially enter another market and have under. It's why Google's in trouble in Europe for promoting its own services over the services that people are actually searching for in their search service.
You know, I like to say that I'm a libertarian. Right. Okay. I don't like the titles. I don't follow this ideology that one has to be a Republican and one has to be a Democrat and one has to believe. I mean, you and I, we agree on a lot of things, but I'm sure that we don't agree on a lot of things either. But we both sit there and say, OK, what is the best for me and my family and for society? What do I think is best?
Honestly, I don't know what by the way, politically, I am literally, and I have been for a long time, a registered independent, period.
Yeah, sure. Listen,
I do not align with the left, and I certainly don't align with the right. I take great exception to a lot of things both of them do. But the point is, this is sort of like the bias thing I wrote about a couple weeks ago or last week or whatever. It's what I'm biased toward is fairness.
Yeah.
You know? Net neutrality, I mean, I understand... No, I don't understand. But there's a whole, you know, anti-government, anti-regulation kind of faction out there, and I guess I understand that it exists. But
I get it. I get it.
This is a case where we're screwing ourselves.
I get it. I totally get it. But the example that has been set prior, you're right. The example that has been set prior is showing that we need some sort of regulation as far as
we obviously do, because left unfettered, these guys do the wrong thing. Period. All the time. Every time.
To kind of go backwards a little bit, the same guy, you know, he was talking about, you know, I'm telling him, like, listen, I'll give an example. If you have Verizon and Verizon owns properties, they're not going to, you know, maybe they may not throttle you to access that content, or they may not charge you extra to access that content. But when there's a competitor, it's fine that they're not charging you for their products. But when there's a competitor How are they going to charge you for that product? Are they going to punish you for using that content? Are they going to throttle you? Yeah, and my answer is yes, they probably will, because that's how businesses do business. And it's not, I honestly don't blame Verizon for saying, no, you got to use our stuff. We compete in this market and you got to use our stuff. That's fine. Let them say that. But don't punish me for choosing your content with someone else's content.
Yeah.
You know, this is that fight that we've been talking about for a while. Net neutrality,
it's not even a debate. I don't understand. There's no debate. You know, this is one of those things where it's like just common sense. And experience.
If you take the politics out of it, Paul, then there really shouldn't be that much of an argument. You know, I am for a open and free internet. Now, there are many things that I don't agree with on that happen on the internet. I think anonymity, and I brought this up last week when I did the show with John, anonymity is an amazing thing, and anonymity is an extremely dangerous thing on the internet. Some sort of responsibility for what you do on the internet. I think there should be some sort of responsibility for everything that you do and you say on the internet. I think that is not really regulated, and that should be a discussion. Should be the discussion, but that's even more. You know what's amazing? Isn't that more of a serious discussion to have that people really don't really touch on? If you're the government and you're looking to kind of fix the internet or not fix the internet, shouldn't you be saying, you know what? There should be some sort of responsibility on people on how act and what they say on the internet.
I'm not ready to say that needs to be regulated by the government per se, but
I'm not saying that's the answer. That's the discussion to have.
We don't. I have 4 minutes before I have to leave, so we can't possibly touch on this topic effectively. But there is an issue with anonymity. And being anonymous on the internet. I feel very strongly that I should have the option not to be confronted by people who are anonymous.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, I'm okay with them being there, but if you choose not to tell me who you really are, then I don't have to deal with you. You don't exist to me. That should be my option. And that's true on Xbox Live. It's true on Twitter. It's true on my comments thing on my blog, whatever it is. You can pick any forum you want. I mean, I think that's the other half of it. Freedom of whatever, blah, 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 welcome to it. But if you're going to make that decision, I don't want any part of you, you know, because it is the anonymous stuff that is always the most useless.
Listen, anonymity is phenomenal when you are, you know, in a country with a terrible political situation and you want to expose it and you want protection, that's fine. But if I want to go on there and make death threats to Paul, there should be some sort of accountability and responsibility as far as finding out who those people are and making it easy. You can't go down the street and say, I'm going to murder you and your family. And not have a consequence.
Well, you could, but let's just say the ramifications would be a little harsher. And that's the point. You know, we feel very safe being anonymous online, and we shouldn't.
I agree with you. You know, there's so much to talk about here, I would love to go into the net neutrality conversation with you, and I don't
this
like
conversation
to go,
gets me very agitated.
It does.
Because
it gets me
to
agitated,
me, it's just
but,
common sense.
But you know what it is, I. There are so many people out there, like Tom Merritt, for example. Tom Merritt knows so much about this, the current situation with this, where I could never do it justice.
Well, Andrew, think of it this way. Rather than worry about the details of it, if in a world removed from today, if the big broadcasters, the big networks of the world had their way, you couldn't exist.
Absolutely not.
I would not exist.
Yeah, but listen, how do we know the ISPs could go and say, listen, you're using this to create content. Yeah. You have to pay us.
Yes.
Done.
Right. Yep. Done. Well, you don't have to, but, you know, the other guys are paying us. And if you don't, you're going to have, 320p video quality and sorry. And that's how you get disadvantaged because you're not Google.
Yeah. It's a very interesting conversation to have. Listen, there are points on both sides. I get it. But we should kind of take the politics out and think about what's best for the consumer and what's best for us.
We can't
people
take
that
the politics out because this is decided by the government, and the government is politics. Yeah, that's the problem. So It's just like nominating a Supreme Court judge or whatever. We can't. There is no version of this where it's not politics, and that's why it gets heated. And that's why you see people voting against their own best interests, because that's what politics does to people.
Yeah.
It's all too right, bad.
Paul. Time to wrap it up.
Sorry.
Yeah, don't worry. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Maybe we could have like a little bit of like a fun show in the coming weeks, huh? Can we move your meeting, or is there a...
No, we can't move my meeting, but...
what can we do?
I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Do it on Tuesday.
Yeah, maybe. You know what? I'm considering going back to Tuesdays because it made life a lot easier. I like that option. I gotta figure it out. In the new year, we'll figure it out. Guys, we do have two big shows coming up. We have three big shows coming up. Paul has to go to his meeting, so Paul's going to leave. Go to therot.com, all things Paul. Also, if you're watching us live, stay tuned. I'm going to hang out with you for a little bit longer. We're going to do What the Talk. We're going to talk about whatever. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about net neutrality. Maybe we'll talk about other things. Follow Paul on Twitter at The Rot. He's there. Look at him. He's leaving now. Goodbye, Paul.
I got to go.
Bye-bye. You can follow Paul on Twitter at The Rot. You can follow me at Andrew Zarin. Guys, Amazon, gfq.co/Amazon. Go there, bookmark it. And the holidays are here. You guys are making your purchases. I know there's 70 people in our chat right now. Just go to gfq.co/Amazon now. Bookmark it, save it, add it to your bookmarks, whatever. And whenever you buy something on Amazon, I get a tiny little portion of it. And it really helps us out. I need cameras. I have no cameras left. This one's gone. This one's dying. It's terrible here. So I use the sales, the bonuses that we get, the tip that we get from it, to buy all the stuff for the studio. We're going to redo this place again. Like every other year, we're redoing. And that helps us out. If you're staying and watching us, stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show exclusively on Patreon. If not, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us right there. I'll see y'all next time.